Hello and welcome back to Tales from Wisteria Lane, the podcast where we give you a fair view of all things Desperate Housewives. We are the boyfriends. I'm Billy Ray.
And I'm Joel.
And today we're doing season 6, episode 18 of Desperate Housewives, My Two Young Men.
Indeed.
So in today's episode, I'm going to be doing the outline of the episode and Joel's going to give us his trivia. Do you have anything to start us off with?
Always, naturally. This episode was directed by David Grossman and written by Bob Daly and Jason Ganzel, who I also believe was the story editor. The episode aired on the 21st of March 2010. So when Susan calls out for her fellow teacher, Mrs. Henderson, she refers to her as Jean, but in the previous episode, you know, the one where she's like, how's MJ doing? Mm-hmm. Her name is Colleen.
That's odd.
So little bit of a thing there. So,
that's Colleen. She goes by Jean.
I mean, it could. They're not too dissimilar. The title of this episode comes from the Stephen Sondheim musical Bounce, and it was originally a separate number, but later became a part of the song Next to You. This is the last episode of the series to feature Andrew and Danielle in the same scene.
Whatever.
Ever. Like, in the series, ever.
That's weird.
To be fair, it didn't really feel like we ever got that many with the two of them in the same scene anyway. They always had their very much separate storylines with Brie.
Not after series one, anyway.
No. Yeah. So, this is the last episode of the season to feature both Dana Delany as Catherine Mayfair and Julie Benz as Robin Gallagher. The writing off of both characters happened because Dana was asked to star in the pilot episode of a new ABC criminal drama, Body of Proof, which I believe is on Disney Plus at the moment. Delany's show was picked up, so she didn't return for the remainder of the year, nor did she come back for season 7, even though she is credited for the last 5 episodes of this season.
Oh, and what a loss.
Yeah. So this episode guest stars a very good actor me and Bea are quite a fan of, even if they have become possibly a little bit problematic over the recent years. But that is John Barrowman, who plays Patrick Logan.
Love John Barrowman.
If you're a fan of Doctor Who, you'll know who John Barrowman is, or knew who, anyway. So John Scott Barrowman, who was born on the 19th of March, 1967, is a Scottish-American actor, author, presenter, singer, and comic book writer, and he is known for his role as Captain Jack Harkness in Doctor Who and Torchwood, and as Malcolm Merlin in the Arrowverse.
Okay, I didn't know that.
I don't know much about Arrow, or...
I don't know much about DC shows, to be honest.
No. Barrowman played recurring guest character Captain Jack Harkness, a pansexual time traveller from the 51st century, which is a weird sentence to say, in the BBC science fiction drama Doctor Who when the series was revived in 2005, and he first appeared in the two-part story of The Empty Child and The Doctor Dances. He went on to appear in the next 3 episodes, and then Jack became so popular he was given his own show, Torchwood, which was a spin-off featuring a team of alien hunters based in modern-day Cardiff, and that came out in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
Which just makes me feel old.
Yeah.
Barrowman worked with Stonewall, which is a gay rights organisation in the UK, on the Education for All campaign against homophobia in schools. And in February 2008, talking about Barrowman's on-set behaviour, Doctor Who co-star Freema Agyeman sent an interview to the London paper. John will walk about with his chap, or his penis, hanging out, having conversations with people. On the 30th of November 2008, Barrowman allegedly exposed himself during an episode of Radio 1's Switch programme. Although the act was not seen, as a show staff member had the webcam, the BBC and Barrowman subsequently apologised for any offence caused. In a 2018 Playbill article, Barrowman publicly revealed that during a performance of Sunset Boulevard, he had exposed himself while standing behind a piano. Though hidden from the audience, it was in clear view of the actors on stage. This prompted a letter from the show's composer, Andrew Lloyd Webber, warning him not to upstage the score with his appendage.
Why does the guy always feel the need to get naked?
I don't know. John Barrowman has since released a statement around all of that, which, and I quote his statement as follows: my high-spirited behaviour, which was only ever intended in good humour to entertain colleagues on set and backstage, has been well documented, including in my autobiographies and even in song. There were a couple of times during filming where I'd resort to tomfoolery, but none of this was ever intended nor interpreted as being sexual in nature.
He actually used the word tomfoolery.
Yes. With the benefit of hindsight, I understand that upset may have been caused by my exuberant behaviour, and I have apologised for this previously. Since my apology in November of 2008, my understanding and behaviour have also changed.
It's just a bit childish, isn't it?
Just a little bit.
And you don't know what people have gone through that could be triggered by that sort of thing, and, you know.
Yeah. So, in this episode, Arena makes borscht. So, what is borscht? I hear you all asking. So borscht is a sour soup made with meat, stock, vegetables and seasonings, common in Eastern European and Northern Asia. In English, the word borscht is most often associated with the soup's variant of Ukraine origin, and traditional Ukraine borscht is typically made from meat or bone stock, sautéed vegetables and beet sour, which is fermented beetroot juice.
Okay.
On this day, or in this week, should I say, American television officials issue an apology following the broadcast of 2 hours of pornography on 2 children's channels.
Oh, God.
Yep. Dutch officials object to ridiculous and out of the realm of fiction claims by retired American General John J. Sheehan, who is a former NATO commander, that the use of gay soldiers in 1995 meant Dutch forces were under strength and poorly led when attempting to protect Bosnian civilians.
Wow, okay.
And finally, the number one song in the US was Rude Boy by Rihanna.
Yes.
And the number one song in the UK was Telephone by Lady Gaga and Beyonce.
Now that's a good week for music right
that
there.
That is a good week for music. But anyway, that's all of my trivia.
So previously, Lynette and Tom worried that Preston is being used by a gold digger, and then he proposed to said gold digger.
You take my money.
Catherine hooked up with Robin. Patrick Logan found out where Angie and Danny are living now. And the new guy infiltrating Bree's company is actually a son of Rex that Bree knew nothing about.
Yes.
So let's go into Bree's story right away.
Okay.
So Mary Alice opens the episode telling us to not always trust photos as they don't show people's true intentions. And we see the Van de Kamp family photos as Mary Alice slags them all off. We then cut to the lounge where Bree, Orson, Andrew and Sam are having their first official family moment as all together. Mm. And Bree tells him that Sam is related to them. So he seems to take it okay, but then he does a walkout and Bree reveals that Danielle is coming to meet him too. But Orson is skeptical about this and Bree's optimism. Apparently it's because she feels overwhelmingly guilty about Rex's behaviour. Sam overhears this from behind a wall. Filthy little spy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Bree is right when she's talking to Andrew to basically say, don't blame Sam. Like, it's not Sam's fault Sam exists.
Mm-hmm.
But Sam has gone about this very weirdly.
Yeah, and Bree is not picking up on that.
No, she's not. It's kind of, as Bree's story progresses in this episode, it kind of feels like she sees Sam as like the son she never got to have.
The straight businessman son.
Yeah, and I guess she kind of sees Rex in him.
I think she also sees a bit of herself in him, the way that he dresses, the way that he behaves.
Look at
that top button done up and that nice conservative jumper. What a lovely young man.
But they did make it so obvious that Sam wants more than just a welcoming into this family with that one shot of him listening behind the door and then that smirk.
So the whole family is having dinner and it's a little bit awkward. Andrew is clearly annoyed with Bree being so friendly with Sam, and he seems to be trying everything he can to ruin the dinner. Sam then plays Rex's old guitar, which everyone is impressed with except Andrew, and then Bree offers it to Sam to keep, which Andrew has a problem with.
Yeah, it must be quite cool for Sam to be playing his dad's guitar when, like, he didn't have a connection mm-hmm. with him, but Bree is insufferable in this scene. And where Bree is insufferable in this scene, Danielle is hilarious.
Oh, Danielle's just Danielle, isn't she?
It's so good to have her back on screen. Like, honestly, she's like, I know what it's like working with poor people. They're always late.
Oh, you mean in the mall?
The outlet mall. She's so funny.
So he says that maybe he wants it, and so Bree tells him to play it. This is Andrew, by the way.
Mm.
But Andrew clearly doesn't know how to play guitar, which, again, is not the point.
No, it's not the point. He's like, I had lessons.
So Orson sticks up for Andrew and has that maybe Andrew should have it if he wants kind of mentality, but Bree isn't having any of it. And then Andrew decides to destroy the thing.
And it's really sad to see Andrew so hurt.
He is so hurt and he is really acting out. And it's like seeing that old Andrew again. And it's,
yeah,
it
he's
does
reverting.
Break my heart. He's like, if I can't have it, no one can.
And then he's just like, we'll share it. And then he like smashes it against the fireplace.
So Sam apologizes and offers to leave. But Bree sticks up for him. And Andrew says that Sam is clearly the perfect son. Shame he isn't hers.
Yeah.
So Andrew is definitely feeling a very certain way about all this, isn't he? He's like, they've got a history. And so this is a very sour point for him.
Yeah.
So as if Bree isn't doing enough damage to her relationship with Andrew, instead of backing off a little bit after what just happened and maybe talking to Andrew one-on-one and, you know, maybe going through some stuff, she decides to show a photo album of Rex to Sam and they talk all about him alone together. She has a little cry and says that she doesn't often get to talk about Rex anymore and that she misses him. And Sam assures her that she can talk to him about Rex anytime.
Rex was a lot of things. Like, yes, he was, but he was also a patronizing, sexist, philandering asshole.
Yes, and this guy coming into our life isn't really helping that image.
No, and also he went to his grave thinking that you killed him, Bree.
I know, that was rude. Orson overhears all of this from the kitchen and he looks either unhappy or concerned, and he wheels his way out to Andrew in the garden. Andrew is embarrassed by his behaviour at dinner, but Orson is being very kind about the whole thing, and Andrew says that he just doesn't trust the guy, which Orson actually agrees with.
Yeah, I think Orson's there basically telling him that that's the correct thing.
Yes.
Yeah, that's,
he says that he can see that Sam is trying awfully hard to get close to Bree, and he wonders why, and he worries about his wife in all this.
Yep.
So Andrew decides to find out all he can about Sam with Orson's
assistance,
yeah,
where possible.
Yeah, he's just like, yeah, find out what you can about the guy then.
I love this. A team I never expected to see.
Right. Now let's move on to Susan and Gabby's story, which is the funniest one of the whole episode.
Yes, I do have to agree.
Susan's story starts with MJ's class collecting boxes of chocolates to sell, but MJ feels insecure about winning. So Susan promises he's going to win this selling competition. Later, Mike is concerned about Susan promising such things, but Susan says that everyone should be able to win something and that MJ is really bad at everything else.
You can't promise something to your child that you can't deliver.
No. Following this, Susan tells Mike that Mike doesn't know what it's like to lose because he wins everything, whereas she does know what it's like to lose, and we have a clip.
See, you win everything. I know what it's like to lose.
Dear God, not the jump rope competition.
It was sixth grade, and there was a jump rope competition. It was down to me and Barbara Briscoe. She had asthma, and it was dandelion season, and her eyes were swollen, and she was jumping blind until her mom gave her an antihistamine shot, which is technically a steroid, and she was juiced.
So... yes, that's Susan's story about how she knows what it's like to lose.
It's technically a steroid and she was juiced.
It's played for laughs, but clearly Susan is going to do whatever it takes for him to win because she has some sort of... she has not let go of this moment. And so if that should tell you how the rest of this story is going to go. So Juanita is clearly selling the chocolate bars as well, same as MJ. And she goes to the ladies' poker session with Gabby to help her sell a bunch of these chocolate bars. Susan makes it awkward as apparently the women have already promised to buy chocolate from MJ, but Gabby doesn't care about this or about MJ's crisis. She does not care. And so she continues with Juanita's chocolate bar selling, and they argue over how MJ hasn't won anything, but Juanita has no friends. And in the end, Lynette and Bree decide to buy the same amount from both kids.
Yeah, Lynette has a point though, where she's like, we might as well just buy none, because if we both buy from, like, if we buy from both of you, it's the same as us buying nothing.
So in this episode, Karen McCluskey is having a cancer party to celebrate the fact that she is now cancer-free.
Yeah.
So Gabby and Susan go to this cancer party, and Gabby gets annoyed that Susan is trying to sell chocolate bars and has a go at her. And she is right. It is kind of tacky to sell chocolate to people at the cancer party.
It's starting to get dirty.
Also, Gabby's wearing what looks like a child's bib with licorice all sorts glued all over it. And yeah, I really hate it.
Wasn't a nice outfit.
Not nice. But then Lee calls her out for selling chocolate to Bob just before Speedo season, because Lee's rubbish and he's a caricature of gay people and he's not an actual character.
Yeah, like, guys, we really rag on Lee an awful lot in this podcast. We're not self-hating gays.
We're Lee-hating gays.
We're Lee-hating gays.
Every time he says anything, I'm like, Lee, shut up.
Just you're stop making talking.
He makes the whole community look bad by being the way that he is. Sorry. Yeah. And it's not because he's effeminate or whatever. I don't care about that. It's just the way that he's like, how dare you give him chocolate before Speedo season? It's like, oh, shut up. So, Susan is on the phone with someone that she hasn't seen since graduation, who she apparently bailed out of jail, and she decided to call now to ask her to buy her son's chocolate to make up for a favour that she owes her.
See, yeah, not right. Not right. This is, I wouldn't dream of calling old school friends like this.
You owe me a favour. This is how you're going to do it. Like,
yeah.
Are you sure you don't want to save that for something? Anyway, they then see Gabby as they drive past selling chocolate to a bunch of construction workers while bending down in a really short skirt, and MJ is worried that he's going to lose, but Susan assures him that he is going to win.
See, Gabby has the right idea. What Gabby has learned here is marketing.
Natural assets.
She has learned to build upon the natural assets to get people's attention in and want to buy the product. What Susan has learned here is cold calling.
Yeah, cold calling. So far, everything they've done has been mostly innocent, somewhat questionable, and maybe not quite innocent sometimes, but this is where it ramps up. So, later, Gabby shows up to find Susan and MJ selling chocolate with MJ in a wheelchair and making a lot of money. She has a go at Susan for sinking so low, and Susan calls her out for selling chocolate in revealing clothes. And, like, what's your point, Susan?
Exactly. So Gabby didn't sell chocolate in revealing clothes. Gabby sold chocolate in her outfits.
In a dress that she wears, like, would wear any other day.
Gabby would wear that dress anyway, like, walking down the street. Like, Gabby wore something a little booby and went to a building site. Susan is convincing people to spend their money on a kid in a wheelchair, and she's telling them that this money will help her kid walk again. She's not even telling people what their money is legitimately going for. This is illegal.
Yeah, this is false advertising. So, I mean, using your body to sell stuff probably isn't the best example for your kid, and it's not really teaching them to be very creative in their approach to things in life. But
no.
What Susan's doing has become quite immoral.
It's not immoral, it's illegal. It is immoral, but it's illegal.
So, like, yeah, and Gabby decides that the gloves are coming off now. Like, this is it. Susan asks a teacher at the school how MJ's doing, and we find out that he's winning at the chocolate selling, which Susan is very happy about, until the teacher says, except for winning to Solis. Why would you say it like that?
Right.
He's winning, except for the person that he's not winning against.
He's doing really well. You know, he's right at the top, except for Juanita Solis. What the hell?
Why would you not say he's second? Oh my God.
G so, or Colette or whatever your bloody name is. What are you doing? What are you playing at?
Oh, she's having a good time. Apparently, though, Juanita is only 2 bars ahead, but is going to be selling outside a weight loss clinic, so her and MJ might want to hurry up.
Ka-ching!
Susan then gets a really terrible idea and decides to put her mobile phone in Juanita's bag, and then gives her detention for stealing her phone. And I was like, no!
This is even worse.
At first,
she tried to make everyone think that that phone was Juanita's phone.
Which was funny, because Juanita wasn't having it.
No, so she was like, did someone bring a cell phone into my class? Juanita.
Yeah, she's like, whose phone's this then? She goes, yours? Yeah. My mom gave it to you as a present.
So you stole it.
So Gabby receives a phone call about this, and she sees MJ walking down the road with all of his chocolate bars and picks him up in her car with a big soda cup to lure him in. So he drops the chocolate bars and hops in the car, which is very MJ behavior.
Very
and
MJ.
She locks all the doors.
Now, MJ is quickly learning a lesson, and that lesson is that anyone could have an ulterior motive, whether you know them or not.
So back at the school, Susan has Juanita cleaning tables. Which I was like, Susan, is it not bad enough that you've given her a false detention?
Well, she's bought herself 3 hours of detention, is what Susan said when she gave her the detention. She's like, someone's bought themselves 3 hours of detention. You've got to give the girl something to do for 3 hours.
Scrapping tables.
Yeah, I know. Excellent door holders.
So she gets a phone call from Gabby with a photo of MJ in the backseat, which under the circumstances seems quite threatening. So they decide to exchange each other's kids over the phone, so, like some sort of hostage situation. So while alone, Susan and Juanita have a little heart-to-heart, girl-to-girl, as Juanita wants to sell the chocolate bars so that her mum is proud of her, and she worries that Gabby is embarrassed by her lack of friends. And this scene is actually really, really sad after so much comedy.
It's really sad, actually, to just kind of... It's nice to see this character continuity with a child character.
Yeah.
Because normally with a child character, they'll give them something to do and then it's...
Oh yeah, we love Juanita on the show.
Juanita has really good character continuity. You know, we've seen consistently throughout the last couple of seasons of her being in there that she's insecure about herself. She's insecure about her weight. You know, she worries why she doesn't look like her mum. And that has naturally come through Juanita's storyline for the last 2 seasons that we've had her. So it's really nice to see.
Yeah, she's a really good little actor.
Yeah.
So they make the hostage exchange, and Susan decides to have a conversation with MJ about what winning really means, seemingly to have decided that Juanita can win this one.
Yeah, and I guess Susan has finally learned the lesson of the episode, which is the lesson that was supposed to be for her, you know, 6 or 7 year old son.
Yeah. So Juanita is revealed as the winner, and Gabby is over the moon. The teacher says that Juanita won by 40 bars and that MJ didn't sell any on the very last day, which Gabby finds a bit suspicious. So she questions MJ about why he didn't sell anything on the last day, and MJ is clearly feeling very highly moral today.
Yeah, he's like really superior.
He says he can't tell her because it's a secret why he didn't sell any chocolate bars, and apparently a good deed is only a good deed if you don't tell. And Gabby seems quite happy about this and says that MJ's mom is a winner just like him.
Aww.
And he pulls that smiley face like, I'm a winner.
He's so cute in this scene.
Now, that was a great story. It was hilarious.
Mm.
Just to see the lengths that these two will go. It's such a shame that I don't think they actually got along very well in real life, because their characters are so good together in episodes, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Susan and Gabby.
Yeah, we watched a little... we watched a YouTube video of like an interview that Eva Longoria gave just about her career in general. And there was a moment about Desperate Housewives where she basically implied that the girls were not friends with
she said,
Terry Hatcher, which we all knew. Yeah. We knew anyway. It's common knowledge at this point.
Yeah, but she says, oh, I miss Gabby. I love playing Gabby. And I became so close with Felicity and Marsha on that set. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, she like deliberately left out Terry. And she did say that she would be the first to jump into a redo of Desperate Housewives if they like brought it back.
It is lovely to genuinely see someone love playing this character so much.
Yeah.
Now, let's do Lynette's story. Lynette goes into Porter's room to collect the laundry as Porter hides in the cupboard from Lynette. He eventually comes out and Lynette has a go at him for sleeping with his girlfriend while Penny is next door. So he does a runoff before Lynette can moan anymore, and Irina accuses Lynette of only caring about this because she doesn't like her.
She's not wrong.
So she tries to say that this isn't the case, but she pretends that she found something that she was looking for the whole time, and then she does a walk off.
Irina's not wrong. If Tom and Lynette had the no screwing in the house rule, then maybe they wouldn't be here giving the Von Trapp family a run for their bloody money.
I reckon it's not just because it's Irina, but I reckon that the severity of how annoyed she is because of Irina.
Yeah.
So the next day, Porter and Irina come downstairs and apologize to Lynette and Tom, and Tom says that they're just uncomfortable with a couple of young, and I quote, unmarried kids, end quote, having sex in their house. And I was like, oh god, don't bring the whole marriage thing into it, you weirdos.
Yeah.
Porter then says that they've decided to get their own apartment, and Tom has a very negative reaction, and he asks for backup from Lynette, but she thinks it's a great idea. So they leave, and Tom is confused about this, but Lynette remembers that they had their first crappy little flat, and it caused a lot of arguments, and they nearly fell out and broke up a few times. And then Tom sees that Lynette is thinking.
She's right, though. Let them move out. And then when they're fighting over who picks up the clothes on the floor and who has to clean the toilet, that's when the realness comes out.
Yeah, because it's always going to have to be Porter, and surely he'll get fed up eventually.
Yeah.
Later, Irina is making dinner for everyone. She's making that...
Borscht.
That saucy stuff that Joel spoke of.
Sour soup.
And apparently they found a 3-bedroom flat together. So Lynette questions the logistics of this, and Preston says that he's quitting college to get a job to afford the flat, and he's going to be a gutter at a meatpacking plant.
I thought it was a house, not a flat.
I thought it was a flat. Well, anyway,
three bedrooms and a balcony.
So Lynette is freaking out whilst Tom is just amazed by the pay and the benefits. Is this one of those union jobs?
Oh my god, it's a union job? Those are hard to get. I bet you got a discount on steaks too.
And we have a clip.
Maybe in Russia, it's every mother's dream for her son to see what the inside of a cow looks like, but not in my home.
Lynette, calm down. You could
be a doctor. You could be a lawyer. Why are you so intent on throwing your life away?
He is going to support his wife. That is what men do for women they love.
He's not in love. He's blinded by a piece of self-serving Euro trash who would sell her own mother for a pair of designer jeans.
So if you didn't pick up on that, Irina froze the sauce that she's been making at Lynette.
Is she wrong?
Which luckily isn't boiling hot, clearly.
No, clearly.
Even though it's just been on the hob.
Maybe it's cold borscht. Is Lynette wrong, really?
Probably not.
This was a read.
She has kind of been implying that Lynette is correct.
Yeah.
That was a hell of a read. I mean, even the Euro trash was annoyed.
I mean, bravo to Lynette for that read.
I mean, did you see Irina's face when she caught her that? She was seething.
Yeah.
Ugh. So Irina does a walk off, leaving everyone in stunned silence.
And also, can we stop with the lying, please? Like, you don't have to have a degree to get a good job.
Yeah, things have changed, but it was a perception back then.
Pretty sure, although don't quote me on this, because I am just pulling this out of my ass, that's just a lie that gets told to ensure that universities get enough student to warrant receiving good funding.
Well, no, I think that did used to be the case. Like, you'd go to university, you'd get a good education, which would lead you into that kind of work so that you wouldn't have to work your way up, and you'd get paid a decent wage early enough because you've got the education to back up your skills and stuff. But
this is it.
It doesn't work that way anymore, does it?
Well, no, universities were only ever initially designed for the wealthy, and that's why they had apprenticeships, and people would go and learn a trade with someone that obviously knew how to do a trade.
Yeah, because you have to pay your way into getting a good job, I guess.
Yeah.
It is funny when you see entry-level jobs that are like, you need a 5-year degree and at least 4 years of experience. It's like, but it's entry-level.
Yeah, I know. It's bloody ridiculous.
Yeah. The next day, Lynette is cleaning sauce from the furniture and Irina apologises and says that she wants to be friends.
Mm.
Lynette says that as Preston's mother, she will fight for his best interests until the day she dies, and Irina says that they're moving the wedding up to next week. She then says that he finds it difficult choosing between his mother and his girlfriend, but that he'll soon find it easier when she's his wife. So Lynette is panicked by Irina, and Irina just kisses her on the cheek from one Scarvo to another and does a walk-off.
From one Mrs. Scarvo to the next.
That was a hilarious line. I was like, oh, you got it right back.
Irina plays a good game. Like, she knows what she's doing. She's done this before. She is a professional gold digger.
Yeah, and Tom is no help again.
No, absolutely not. Of course not.
Anyway.
Oh, well.
Now let's move on to Catherine. Catherine has just finished having more gay sex, and then her and Robin discuss the upcoming party to celebrate Karen being cancer-free, so Karen's cancer pie. Catherine doesn't want to go to the party with Robin as, well, you know, as a couple, because no one knows except for Susan what's going on between them, and Robin tells Catherine that they need to DTR, which is define the relationship.
Yeah, they've gone straight into the what are we chat.
Yeah, so Robin pretty much wants to DTR. She wants a label. She wants to know what they are. But Catherine's in that let's just be happy doing what we're doing camp, which is a great way of saying, let me continue having sex with you whilst also not fulfilling anything emotional for you because I'm not ready for that.
It's a difficult situation because Robin's obviously comfortable with who she is because she's known for quite a while. Catherine is of an older generation who has only just started to come to terms with the fact that, or not even come to terms with it, she's only just realised that she might not be 100% heterosexual. And so it will therefore will take Catherine some time to be comfortable being open in public with Robin.
Yeah. Have you ever gone out with someone that was not out?
Yes.
Me too.
And I ended the relationship because of it in the end.
Yeah, it's hard.
It was difficult, and I wouldn't say I'm friends with that person. It ended nicely. We still talk from time to time to see, you know, how the other one is doing. It wasn't a bad breakup. It was simply just I can no longer be with you. We've been together for over a year, I think, at this point. I can't continue to be with you because I can't be with someone that is embarrassed by me. I can't be with someone that won't admit who they are to their parents.
Well, when you're out, it's like, I've done enough hiding.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, you need to go through your journey because I've already gone through that and I don't want to go through it again.
Exactly. So it's difficult for Robin, I think, in this situation because she does want to be open and out with Catherine. But at the same time, I do think she needs to appreciate that Catherine's only just coming, like, getting her head around all of this. So it will take her a bit of time.
Yeah, but it's not going to work if it takes too long.
No, it won't.
So the ladies show up to the party, the cancer party. Looking really good, both of them, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And Catherine is worried about blowing everyone's minds, which Robin finds laughable because of everything that's happened with Catherine already.
Yeah.
So Tom asks if he can take Catherine to be introduced to Karen's doctor, who's apparently really cute. And Robin's like, yeah, go ahead. We're only mates after all. We're only roommates. So she talks to the doctor and does a lot of fake laughing. And Robin takes her outside to have a moan at her for flirting with people in front of her.
But she has a point.
Yeah, it was a bit...
It was hair flippy and, like we said, the fake laughing, and she might as well just bent over.
Yeah, and the guy wasn't cute.
No, he wasn't. And what is it with doctors in this show? It's always a doctor in some way, shape or form. Orson, Rex, Dr. Ron, this dude, Adam, they've all been in the medical profession.
Yeah, do you really want to get with another doctor?
Do we really want another doctor on the street,
Does
please?
Catherine want to get with another doctor?
Yeah.
But Catherine says that she wasn't flirting. So, as they argue in, everyone indoors has a silence in honour of those who didn't survive cancer.
Yeah.
And this happens at the worst time. Everyone hears them arguing about having gay sex, but maybe not being a lesbian. And then they realise everyone just heard that.
There we go. She's outed herself. Problem solved.
Yeah. Now, that's rough.
Hilarious. Just because I enjoy having sex with you doesn't make me a lesbian.
Catherine is...
such a mess. She's such a messy queen.
Messy energy.
She's such a messy queen.
The next day, Karen tries to tell Catherine that it wasn't too embarrassing what happened last night as she walks by the front lawn, but Catherine thinks that having her sex life exposed to the whole neighbourhood is pretty bad. Karen asks if Catherine really likes this girl, to which she says yes, she might, and Karen tells her to be happy and stop caring about what other people think.
Yeah.
The old lady's got advice to give, you know, she's like, I've lived my life, trust me, just...
Karen's such a sweetheart, like, she just doesn't care.
No, she's old, she's lived her whole life, and she's nearly just died from cancer, probably.
She's just giving kick-ass advice to everyone, sprinkling her help around the street like a cancer-beating fairy, and yeah. I love it.
Robin goes into her and Catherine's room to find a bunch of suitcases and Catherine just sitting by the window. She says that she cares too much what people think and that she can't have everyone watching and judging her. So Robin worries that Catherine is about to ask her to leave, but Catherine says that she wants to go with her and that maybe they could leave together as they figure out this whole relationship. And Robin says that she's always wanted to see Paris.
This scene is a gag. Like, an absolute gag. Everyone just sits there and thinks that, yes, like, what Robin thinks. Catherine's about to break up with her. Again, she's about to say, I just can't do this, or what have you. And then for Catherine to suddenly flip it and be like, but I want to go with you and make this work. Like, really love it. Like, the little sort of, like, eloping vibe we got from it.
Yeah, Catherine's like, you know what? Fuck these gossipy bitches. Let's swan off.
Figure it out. She does say, like, oh, maybe when we figured it out, we could come back.
Yeah.
But... yeah, I love the idea of just two lesbians going to Paris. Woo!
I mean, by the time they figured it out, maybe they won't be so... maybe she won't care what people think of her all the time. Because that's exactly a big boundary, isn't it?
Yeah.
And when you're away from people that you know just constantly surrounding you and knowing your entire embarrassing history, it's probably going to help. Now let's move on to the Bolands, which is the last story of the episode.
Yep.
So Nick is giving Angie the silent treatment, but eventually they start fighting because Angie told her mum about Patrick. He's worried about more people being involved and knowing about Patrick, but Angie assures him that he is Danny's father as far as she's concerned, and they sort of make up. So we're establishing that Nick feels slightly self-conscious about the whole being Danny's father label.
I'm guessing Andrew didn't tell Nick that she also told Gabby about everything.
It doesn't sound like she did tell him that.
No.
She's like, he's pretty angry. I'll probably sprinkle that in later.
But I do think that Andrew and Nick should tell Danny.
100%.
Because if they tell Danny now...
He's old enough now.
He's much more likely to agree that Nick is and always will be his father. But if he finds out from someone else, he's likely to get rather upset.
Yes.
So just tell the kid.
Yeah, tell the kid. He's old enough now. We then cut to the woman who we saw in the previous episode as she receives a phone call from Patrick Logan and they arrange to meet up with the cash.
I've got a case of selective Alzheimer's, so don't forget the cash.
Later, Nick comes home and finds Danny in the garage and he brings him a beer as he clearly wants to talk to him man to man. And this is what straight men do, you know?
Yeah.
Talk over a beer.
Father and son have a beer while we fix a bike.
So Danny has a job to pay for a car, because apparently they won't buy him one because they're stingy. Although currently he's just riding a bike, so he's doing up his bike. Nick then gets all sappy about Danny being all grown up and not being a child anymore, and he leaves Danny to his bike. It was actually a really nice scene between the two of them. It's probably the first nice scene that I've ever seen between them.
Yeah, it was a really sweet scene.
I wish we had more nice scenes between them, because I really don't like Nick.
No, I don't really care for Nick either.
All they've shown is Nick just being the worst, a most bit horrible of an asshole, man. And yeah. I don't really think it was necessary. No. They only did it to set him up as a potential...
villain.
Like, maybe he's the strangler. That's the only reason they did it. And then it was for nothing. We then cut to Patrick Logan showing up at that nasty, rusty, dusty, crusty woman's house. And they have tea, and Patrick hands over the money. And we're introduced to John Barrowman.
I remember when I watched this for the first time and I saw him in it, bitch, I was gagged. I was not prepared to see John Barrowman.
I remember he walked in and after all this time I was like, what? John Barrowman is a villain?
That's the one thing I was like so adamant I didn't want you to know. Because I knew you knew who John Barrowman was and I assumed you had no idea that he was going to be in this when I was first showing you the show.
The idea of him being a villain blew my mind.
I liked the initial shot we have of him when he's talking to the neighbor and we just see his mouth. Like, that was really cool.
So this lady decides that now is the time to ask that there won't be any trouble, and Patrick assures her that he just wants what has been taken from him. And you know what, lady, you're getting paid to give away someone's location,
right?
Like, what?
She's here, like, warning? She likes Rose, who's Angie's mother, Danny's grandmother. She likes Rose and she doesn't want anything bad to happen to her. But then why sell out Rose's kid?
You're such a liar.
You literally just sold out Rose's kid. And like, I'd kill her too.
She just doesn't want it on her conscience if anything happens. But she's still morally corrupt enough to do this.
Yeah.
So he then tells her that she should move somewhere safer. She assures him that the front door is always locked. But then he says about the fire escape. And he demonstrates how a crazy person could break in.
And then she's like, you're crazy.
Yeah, he wraps the scarf around his hand, smashes through the window, and then he approaches her with the scarf in that sort of tight strangulation hold thing.
She did. She did, man.
Yeah, he totally killed her.
I would too. She flaps her gums too easily. Gabby literally said, oh yeah, you know, we live in Fairview. And then the first thing that this bitch does is call Patrick Logan. She's like, yeah, I know where he is. She flaps her gums too easily. He can't,
yeah.
He can't warrant her.
And now he can pick that money back up and pay yeah. for somewhere to stay in Fairview.
And she clearly has a conscience because she was like, oh, I don't want anything bad to happen. He can't afford this woman suddenly growing a conscience after he leaves, telling Rose and letting Rose give Angie a heads up.
Mm. So the episode ends with Mary Alice narrating about ways to win in this world. And we see Catherine and Robin leaving.
Without saying goodbye again. Catherine did this the first time she left the lane.
Yeah. Andrew reading through Sam's file in Bree's office. Lynette giving Preston and Irina freshly baked cookies, seemingly trying to win the whole mum versus girlfriend war. And Patrick Logan parked outside the Bolan's house, watching Danny outside.
He found them.
Yeah. And that was the episode.
Yes. It was a good episode, actually. I quite enjoyed it.
I did as well. Mm. I was really looking forward to talking about it as well, because I just really enjoyed Susan and Gabby. I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, that main...
And the final introduction of Patrick Logan properly.
Yes.
So let's move on to the next part of the episode where Joel's going to give us the gayest and the straightest moments. So what do you have for the gayest moment?
My award for the gayest moment. It goes to Gabby at the building site.
What? Why?
Mood. Because who doesn't want to dress sexy and go to a building site?
Yeah, true.
Yeah, it goes to Gabby at the building site for using what she's got to get what she needs. And that's very gay energy. We learn very, very quickly we have to use what we've got to get what we need.
Yeah, fair. So what do you have for straightest moment?
My award for straightest moment. I'm going to give it to Danny and Nick. I couldn't really think of anything else that was overly straight.
Beer talk?
In this episode, yeah, the beer talk scene. That's very, like, hetero dad talking to his hetero son.
Let's have a chat and pop open some cold ones.
Yeah, yeah. Let's have a chat about the girls.
Any female son?
Yeah, all of that sort of stuff. Very hetero. Although I'm sure the gays do it as well. And now we move on to B and his awards for best and worst parent. So who do you have for the best parent?
So my award for...
best parent of the episode.
So, by default, it goes to Lynette for trying to break up Preston and Irina a little bit more and get into that whole situation.
Okay.
By default, because I didn't really know who else to give it to.
I mean, you could have given it to Nick.
Oh, yeah, I could have given it to Nick, couldn't I?
Yeah.
Maybe I should give it to Nick, actually.
I think you should.
It was nice in this episode.
And now that we know more about the Angie, Nick, Danny storyline, I think... Nick, someone that's come along and just taken on the responsibility of a father for a child.
True. Let's forget what we've seen in previous episodes and just pretend that this is all we know. So yeah. Best parent goes to Nick.
Yeah, bravo. Go on, Nick. Bravo, Nick. Look at me. I convinced you. Okay, and who do you have for the worst parent?
My award for...
worst parent of the episode.
This is a joint one between Susan and Gabby. Susan had MJ in a wheelchair to sell chocolate and Juanita in detention so that her and MJ could win. Mm. And Gabby literally kidnapped MJ and arranged a hostage exchange.
Yeah, because Susan had kidnapped Juanita, practically.
Well, she gave her detention, yeah. Which was wrong. So I'm putting them together.
Gabby was reactionary to Susan. I don't think Gabby deserves this worst parent, in my opinion.
She kidnapped a child.
She was reactionary to Susan... essentially kidnapping her child.
I don't care. It goes to Susan and Gabby.
That was false imprisonment on Susan's part right there.
Yeah. But also, I would like to give a special shout out to Bree, who did not win worst parent, but is still doing a great job at Andrew in that moment, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Bree gets honourable shout out for worst parent.
Yeah, for the attitude of, I don't care about the kids.
Yeah.
Fuck the kids.
Okay, well, bravo to Gabby, Susan, Bree, and Nick.
Bravo, everyone. Bravo. Fucking bravo. So that was season 6, episode 18, My Two Young Men. If anyone has any questions, queries, comments, and or theories, where can they find us?
You can find us on Instagram at Boyfriends Review, and you can find us on...
Well, that's it, actually, isn't it?
That's it, yeah. You can find us on Instagram at Boyfriends Review.
Because we don't do Twitter anymore.
No. So Louisa is still messaging, like I'm still communicating with Louisa. So hello, Louisa. I won't last name you because I did that once before and I felt bad about it. Just because I shouldn't really be last naming people. And she is now giving me and B all of the German Desperate Housewives trivia where she can anyway. And the most recent one that she sent me was that she does have a fun fact to add when she was rewatching season 6. And there's a cameo of German supermodel Heidi Klum. Mm-hmm. But her German voice is spoken by a voice actress, even though Heidi Klum speaks fluent German.
Oh, okay.
And apparently Heidi hosts a famous German TV show. And so everybody knows her for her annoying high-pitched voice. And the voice in the episode definitely isn't.
her annoying high-pitched voice.
Yeah, apparently Heidi Klum's got an annoying high-pitched voice.
Ow.
So.
Bit harsh.
Very, very harsh.
Well, thanks for that, Louisa. Loving the German trivia.
Yeah,
if anyone else has any other trivia from other countries, would love to know it.
Yeah, give us a shout. Let us know if there's any trivia that you've come across that maybe we've forgotten or ignored or something. We do like, not all of the trivia that we put in at the beginning of the episodes makes it into the episode because it's just timing-wise,
yeah,
really.
And a lot of it does get cut.
I do have a nasty habit of droning on about trivia because I find things interesting.
You can also email us at boyfriendsreview@outlook.com and you can find Louis, who does the artwork, at Doc Red Monk Design, and he also has a link to his Etsy page where he does commissions.
Yes.
Join us next time. We'll be back in your ear holes with Season 6, Episode 19, We All Deserve to Die.
We all deserve to die.
And that'll be my turn to do trivia, and I know where that song comes from.
Yes.
So, see you then, guys.
Bye.
Bye.